Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill. A new podcast series from Newstalk.
Hello, I'm Professor Luke O'Neill and welcome to this week's Show Me the Science, where every week I take a science topic and dig into it. Now, this week's topic, this could be tricky, but let's just hold hands and get there together. I'm going to talk about the science of men versus women. Now, there's already a thing, men and women versus each other, but it's a really important area to understand what's the basis for our differences and our similarities. Now, let me give you two reasons why it's extremely important. First of all, some diseases really afflict women and hardly afflict men at all. One good example is autoimmune disease, which I work on. They're much more common in women than men. Lupus is a really nasty autoimmune disease, affects all the organs in your body. Again, women are afflicted by that much more than men. Why is that? Can we understand the biology of that, for instance? So that's one reason why it's important. And then beyond that, as we move out into society, it's been a huge problem. Discrimination, stopping people living full lives. Awful stuff has happened in this discriminatory sort of world of men versus women. And again, that's well worth looking at scientifically to make sure we explain to people. You can't say a woman is like this and therefore can't do certain things, or a man is like that. The science tells us, and the bottom line I'll give it to you already is, there's very few differences between us in so many ways. And it's kind of about letting people live full lives. That's how I see this. You shouldn't be holding people back because they are a man or a woman in any way at all. And we can use science then to help us make sure that doesn't happen. Age old battle, of course, of the sexes going back through millennia, I guess. And the other thing to mention is education. And that's where it gets serious as well, because it turns out that boys and girls are slightly different in the educational system, and very disturbingly, boys are doing less well in education. And that's a worry. And why would that be? And what can we do about it? They're the kind of things I'm going to touch on. They're the things that interest me when it comes to this big question, I suppose. And remember, there's a lot more similarities than differences. Now, as you know, I'm a biologist as well. My actual science is biology. I became an immunologist as a branch of biology, which is the science of life. And if we look at other creatures, it's extremely interesting. Some creatures, there's massive differences between them. So the mandrill, a type of monkey. The male wears makeup. There's a good phrase for you. They've got really colourful faces, the mandrill, with reds and blues and all kinds of colours. The females don't. Now, there's one difference. Now, again, this must be to do with sexual selection. The female likes a male with colours on its face, and that gets selected out through evolution, I guess. The most extreme example is my favourite name creature, the triple wart sea devil. Isn't that superb as a name? Now, the female is 30 centimetres long, the male is just 1 centimetre and is effectively parasitic on the female, a bit like humans. But there's a massive difference, and you can tell a female and a male a mile off, basically. I like that example of a creature because that means they never fight over the duvet. Another great joke, because there's a massive difference in size there, you know. And another one might be the pheasants. The males have massive, big, ornate tails. The females are called small and dull. Never use those phrases usually, but with pheasants you can say the female is small and dull. So big differences. Now, what about humans? We're very, very similar. Now, there's obvious differences that we all know about. But if you look at a man and woman standing beside each other, certainly if they're all wearing jeans and a jumper like they used to when I was a teenager, you can't tell the difference between them, really. You can't tell the difference between a male and female before puberty for definite. It's very hard to tell them apart, you know. Now, obviously, they develop certain physical features and now we can tell them apart. But still, you know, we're very, very similar, just even physically. The two things we do differ in, undisputed, is men are slightly taller on average. That's for definite. And they've got slightly more muscle mass. Now, what that means is, you know, on average, but there's a thing called a normal distribution. So people move to an average. There's very tall men and very small men, and the average is in the middle. You see a curve. They overlap, you know. There's some very tall women and there's some very small men. Just on average, it's slightly taller in the case of males, slightly smaller in the case of females. A second one then would be muscle mass. And again, there are some very muscular women. There's some very non-muscular men. And certain different ethnicities, you'll see differences. And they reckon, for example, some ethnicities, there's even less differences between males and females. So it really is an interesting topic to consider where these differences might lie. Now, let me just mention disease again for a minute, because it is an important thing. I'll give you two diseases. Primary biliary cirrhosis, that's a liver disease. 90% of cases are in women. Primary sclerosing cholangitis, that's a disease of inflammation of the bile duct. And my area is inflammation, I know this one. That's much more common in men. And we don't know why. Big mystery why that is. And look at COVID, more common in men than women, and we still don't fully know why. So again, it's a very important question to try to get your teeth into, I guess, and have a look at that in great detail. And then more examples which are very serious to people. Women, there's a 10 times increased incidence of eating disorders in women versus men, whereas autism is 4 times more common in men. And that's interesting as well. We'd love to know why those things are there, because again, it might help us treat these things. A couple of ways, I suppose, of providing help to people. So all these differences are well reported. Now, let's get on to the basis for these kinds of differences. And can we understand them? Well, one is, if you look at the height one, there's a simple one. Can we understand why are men taller than women? They don't know. Now, there's a real admission. Science doesn't know everything, and they try to find out why it is. Now, of course, it's not a medical thing, so I guess there's been less research. But it would be a good thing to sort out, because that might inform research and the more important things. And the latest evidence would suggest that it's to do with genes in your body, like most things are, of course, but it's to do with the expression of the genes, the amount of the genes that are being made. In other words, men and women have the same genes, but men express more of a subset of genes, and that makes them taller. And that's 12% of height is based on what we call gene expression. This is because genes are the recipe, of course, to make proteins, as I hope you all know by now, but they've got a volume control, and you turn it up, turn down. And you turn up some of these genes, and then you're going to be taller than if they're turned down. And again, that would run in families as well, where tall people are, they're inclined to have slightly more of the genes. And even women then slightly turned up, they get a bit taller. Another one that we've looked at closely scientifically is heart disease. Much more common in men. And again, they wonder why. Is it stress? Is it bad diet? It could be the type of fat in the body. Men are inclined to have what's called visceral fat around the middle. Women have less of that. They've got more what's called subcutaneous fat under the skin. And that difference seems to put pressure on the heart. If you're carrying loads of visceral fat, bigger risk of heart disease, pressure on the heart. Of course, women have heart disease as well. The ones who do are inclined to have more visceral fat too. So again, a difference there in the level of fat in the body might govern, you know, whether you're at risk of heart disease. And that's one example of how, you know, we may well have a mechanism, I suppose. Now, the trouble is, those are good. All those studies are great, and I love them. Great science, great data to support what I just told you. When you go beyond that into, say, more psychological things and, you know, mental health and the brain, we move now from the immune system into the brain. That gets much more controversial. It's very hard to pin these things down. And you'd all be very well aware of this. There's anecdotal stuff going back generations in my own family. My sister was told as a teenager, don't do maths because girls can't do sums.
Please note that the percentage in these pie graphs do not add up to 100% because the math was done by a woman.
That was absolutely outrageous. Study after study after study. I'm talking about 36 separate studies were looked at in combination. Great data. They looked at various skills, reading, maths, communication skills, and motor skills, which means how dexterous you are. And guess what they found? There was no difference between men and women in those skills. If there was a difference, it was tiny. So what that means is a woman is just as good as a man at maths or at using a toolkit to, you know, fix something. But equally, a man can be as good as a woman at communication, in spite of the fact that we have the strong silent type. But the truth is, there's no difference in these studies with those specific skills. There was one massive study done, 4,000 separate studies on mathematical ability. And guess what? Again, there was no difference. If anything, some of those studies are showing women are slightly better at maths. Now, the difference isn't huge. A big thing about this is you'll often find more differences between two men in one of those studies than between a man and a woman. And that just tells us that they're basically the same with all those different things. So we can forget those ones for the kickoff. But then if we look at personality and those kinds of traits, then it gets a bit more interesting, I suppose, a bit more complicated. There were 31,000 people assessed in a massive study for personality type and various personality traits, and they found a difference. Women were inclined to be more anxious in general than men and to be warmer as individuals, an interpersonal warmth. Men were inclined to be more dutiful at doing things and a bit more assertive. Now, that seems to hold up in studies. Of course, the big question is that environmental or is it hardwired? We don't know. Back to that again, because that's a key question. Now, here's a bit of science that I like about this. You could then look at the question. This is all based on questionnaires, which can be a bit tricky. But you could take a questionnaire and not know if it was a man or a woman and predict with 85% accuracy if the questions were being answered by a man or a woman. That shows huge power in that kind of study. In other words, those traits are able to predict a man versus a woman, and that gives us confidence in that particular study, which is good. Now, one thing that came out was a thing called empathy. And women, again, were inclined to score more on empathy. I thought this warmth idea is more generally bundled into a thing called empathy. It's reading the other person and responding in an empathic way. Women were inclined to be more empathic than men.
I have empathy.
And one thing that was really interesting was in the study, another study, they found out that men are inclined to be empathic to begin with, and then they tune out.
Remember, pick up Bart.
I'm on my way. What'd you say, Marge?
And they get distracted, shall we say. And there's a term for this, you know, are you emotionally available to someone else? There's a great phrase, isn't it? Probably no scientific basis, but I like it, emotionally available. Men and women complain about this, that the man becomes emotionally unavailable. But women are inclined to be more empathic for longer than men. That was shown as well by that. So, and what this tells us is a very interesting thing, they think. To have an effective couple, and it could be a man or a woman, it could be two women, it could be two men, it could be anything really, that needs to be balance. So if one of the couple, shall we say, is inclined to, you know, be empathic to begin with and then tune out, and the other one stays empathic, that could be useful, because maybe one of the couple has to fight the tiger that's coming towards it, you know, the couple, and the other one is a bit too empathic towards the tiger. So it could be that balance might be a survival thing. So the most effective of couples probably have, you know, one has one trait and one has the other, and that's an interesting reason why this would happen. And then the next thing about this that really interests me was leadership skills. What makes a good leader?
Hail Caesar!
Hail Caesar!
Hail!
Now in the old days, the leader was like Genghis Khan, you know, pounding on his chest, riding across the plains and attacking everybody and shouting and bullying everybody. That's not a good leader anymore, especially nowadays. The best leaders actually have a mix of men and women traits. There's very good evidence for this now. You've got to be assertive and you've got to be empathic, and you choose your moment.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
And those people become great leaders. And more evidence suggests that's the case. And in fact, men have to show some of these more traditional woman traits, I suppose, to be a good leader as well, you might say. So it's a mix of traits that makes someone really powerful as a leader. And then it turns out then that another study that really got my attention was whether people prefer a male or female leader. Women were inclined to prefer a male leader and men were inclined to prefer a female leader. Isn't that interesting? So there's some difference there that we don't quite understand. But then that stood up in one of these studies as well. And I think the leadership one is a really important one, because trying to train young people then how to have good leadership skills, you need these mix of traits that makes you a really good, leader, I suppose. Now, when we dig a bit deeper and we look into the brains of men and women, can we see any differences just to see if something physical? Because it's one thing filling in a questionnaire or assessing all this by asking people, but can you see something physical that's different? And there was a load of rubbish science on this, by the way, where they were saying, yeah, the female brain has more connections between the front and back than the male. Certain parts are bigger in a man than a woman.
You see, they're not naturally familiar with mechanical principles nor machines. When breaking in any new worker, and of course, especially a woman, you've got to explain every angle of the process down to the last detail.
All nonsense. You cannot tell the difference between a male and a female brain. If I was to show a brain to an expert in this area, they could not say, oh, that's a female brain. It's obviously a bit smaller because overall, you're physically smaller. Females are physically smaller, so the brains are different in size. But you cannot tell there's a part of the brain that makes you empathic. It's far too simplistic, you see. So the basis for this must be to do with learning and when you're growing up and all those various things come into play, you know. And that brings me on to a couple of really important last couple of things I want to talk about. And that is what's called the pink-washed brain and the blue-washed brain. If from childhood you treat the male different to the female and vice versa, then you might end up with someone who has those traits. So it's not so much hardwired at all. One great study on this show, TV shows that people watch. Now, wait to hear this. This was a great study, I suppose. Someone watched 124 primetime TV shows in America. By far and away, the women characters were involved in interpersonal relationships, more romantic, say, more kind of human interest stories. The men were inclined to have work-related activities. Now, if you're watching that from an early age, that will brainwash you into thinking, oh, men have certain traits compared to females. And that just shows you how these things, you know, affect the blue washing and the pink washing of the brain. And it's a very important topic, and when we talk about education. And that's the last thing I'm going to talk about, because it's a very serious thing. Loads and loads of studies looking at education and the way you educate boys versus girls, who performs well in which environment. Very important for educationalists to look at this. Mainly in secondary school, this has been done. In primary school, you avoid the pink and the blue washing, for definite. Otherwise, you might get a product you don't really want from this education process, if we can call it a product. Secondary school is more vivid because obviously puberty is happening. And study after study shows boys do worse in secondary school than girls across every country. This is a universal trait. The girls are outperforming the boys, and they do it up to the age of 18. And then the boys kind of catch up. Now, that's partly because many boys have left education, so you've lost those ones. And that's a big worry, by the way, because if a boy leaves education at the age of 15 or 16, they are inclined to have a life course that's very disadvantaged. And they're inclined to become extremists politically. So the future, we've got to be very careful, because very often you might end up with people then who are more socially disruptive for our society. So keep boys in education as long as we can is the key mission, because eventually they catch up. The thing is to do with emotional maturity. Boys are probably 18 months behind girls. So a 14-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl are very, very different. You can't treat them the same in the classroom, really, because of this maturity issue is one factor in why these differences might be there. The big question then becomes single-sex versus co-ed schools. Lots of studies on that, which is beneficial to who. And again, they're mixed. I mean, they're still in the middle of these studies, I guess. Girls get much more stressed in a single-sex school. That's the first thing. And one of these studies said that a 15-year-old high-performing girl in a single-sex school is the unhappiest of anybody in any survey ever. They feel this desire to be performing socially. Social performance comes into it. There's pressure on girls in school in that way. In a mixed co-ed school, there's less of that, it seems, and the girls are a bit happier. So that's a funny one. So maybe a co-ed school makes girls... Now, of course, there's massive range between schools. There's some fantastic single-sex schools where the girls do very well. So it's a bit of a tricky one to pin down. But it's a very, very active area to see what's the best way to educate boys versus girls. And in Germany, for instance, the curriculum is slightly different for a boy at 14 or 15 than a girl, to draw things out in the boy. Education is all about drawing things out, remember. So it's a very important topic to try to figure out the best way. Another reason why they've shown that the girls outperform the boys, by the way, is not enough male teachers. And everybody needs role models. Men and women and boys and girls need role models. And there's a lot less male teachers. Certainly in primary school, there's hardly any in many countries. Secondary school, still the women are now 70-80% are female. And therefore a young boy who's 14 or 15 may not respond as well in that situation. The teacher themselves may have unconscious bias. In Germany, they're trying to incentivize boys, or males, to go into education to get more male teachers. And they're going to pay them a premium. There's a controversy now. But still, this is a factor. Male versus female teachers. So it's a really important thing to think about education and how we educate boys and girls to make it optimal. Remember, the whole basis for this whole subject of men versus women is to make things better for men or women, to enhance our lives and not discriminate and not hold people back. And that is the science of men versus women. So thank you very much again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it and got some useful information out of it. Please subscribe to the podcast, and of course join me every week on the Pat Kenny Show on News Talk. Thank you very much, and all the very best.